tell. I can really tell. It's shining through. Shine on. Welcome back to our Tuesday edition of the broadcast, the 19th of March. See Rachel Notley calling an election in Alberta. There's something new for us to talk about, but not today. Hey, there's a budget today. It's not released till after 5, so there won't be a whole lot for us to say. We'll also not be talking about SNC-Lavalin on the show. And what else will we not be talking about? Well, I don't know what we won't be talking about.
Sidewalks?
Sidewalks. Yeah, we're not talking about sidewalks either. There are the list of the things we won't be talking about, but we eventually will on our Twitter account. That whole big, what are you calling this, bracket March Madness?
March McLeodness.
Oh, that's so clever.
Thank you.
I like that.
It took me way too long.
What are you doing for March break? No, not you, Matt. Oh. We're going to have J. Aaron Roy, the owner of Cape and Cowl Collectibles. We're going to chat with Chris Parsons about, well, not hiring nurses. And not having vacations. It's all connected. We'll tell you more. Sports, go sports. Moshe Lander, just a few moments. University economist specializing in the world of professional sports. We're talking football stadiums in a second. Sean Cleary is with us on the broadcast this afternoon. He is the counselor responsible for the area that includes Sir Sanford Fleming Park. And welcome back to the show, Counselor Cleary. How are you, sir?
You know what, Sheldon? I'm pretty darn awesome. I'm walking on a sidewalk, and Mother Nature is doing what our contractors couldn't do.
There you go. That's what I say. Just wait long enough, and eventually it won't be a problem. But that's not an answer. That's not a legitimate answer because, you know, this is going to come up next winter. Always does. This issue of a part of Sir Sanford Fleming Park being up for sale and being listed this week, when did you hear about this?
So our real estate staff at the city told me about it last year, and they have been working on either securing some sort of rights to the trail or trying to buy the property. So when the property came up as publicly listed for sale last week, I was pretty taken aback.
You know, and we can often look at a piece of property and guess what its fair market value is. We have an assessment system that's supposed to be fair market value. This parcel of land, what, just about almost 2.5 acres, not quite, is assessed at $237,500 according to what the Herald wrote. And the list price is $990,000?
That's what I understand, yep.
So what do we know about the owners? Is this right now going through some kind of probate? Is this actually part of an estate?
So I don't know the full extent of the current, you know, ownership. I do know it's been in the same family for generations, and this current generation is looking at its options and clearly now looking to get rid of the piece of property. And in terms of market value is always what people are willing to pay for something. And given that this is 2.3 acres with water frontage and, in fact, a pre-Confederation water lot, with access, it's basically a flag lot. It's got small access to Purcell's Cove Road for a driveway. You know, it's worth what someone is willing to pay for it to put a big house on it.
Well, and again, ultimately, that's what market value is. And as I heard you say to Rick Howe earlier today, these are tax dollars. This isn't like, you know, a personal investment. This isn't private landowners. This is public land being used for public reason that may involve public dollars. We know that one of the provisions of the Municipal Government Act is that you can do land negotiations in private. This is not private. This is public. This is no sense that you're in some way being asked to pay more than what perhaps the market will bear?
Well, so, you know, in the discussions that our real estate staff were having, I'm sure no one was offering $1 million, but now that it's listed for this and, you know, we have to have, you know, I don't want to say we're over a barrel, but, you know, we're in a position now where this piece of land, which has been used by the public for generations, is potentially going to leave the public hands. Well, I mean, it's private land, but it's you know, potentially going to be taken away from public use. And so for me, given the fact that Sir Sanford Fleming Park is a regional park within our system, and it has not only importance locally, it has national significance because of Sir Sanford Fleming and the Dingle Tower. I want to keep this park whole, and I want to make sure people can continue to use that loop trail and all parts of that park down to the water.
We've got Councillor Sean Cleary here with us. And Councillor, I don't know if anyone asked this. I put a question to the real estate division of HRM this morning, and I haven't gotten an answer back. I told them that you were going to be on today, and I was hoping to hear back. There is something called adverse possession rights, squatter's rights, as they're known, that if you use a piece of property continuously for at least 20 years, that the land had been publicly known and that the use of the land, is in the public interest, that you can't necessarily be blocked from using said trail or walking path. They could restrict, vehicles from traveling, but not necessarily foot traffic. Is this, do you know if anyone from the real estate division has looked into that?
I know all aspects of that have been looked at. It really comes down to lawyers and any challenge in a courtroom, because, when you look at the history of these kind of pieces of property, whether there were agreements, verbal or otherwise, can impact adverse possession. So if you think about, if someone is, two neighbors, for example, someone puts a fence 2 feet over under their neighbor's property, and it's there for decades and decades and decades, then they can claim some adverse possession. But if there was an agreement with the original landowner and said, look, yeah, of course you could put your fence over here for a certain period of time and you have to take it away at some point in time, but then, people forget about that agreement or it's never codified, then you have to argue that out in a courtroom on whether it's yours, it's mine. And so I'm not a lawyer. I'm not arguing for anything. What I am looking at is, making sure this stays publicly accessible and we can continue to use this part of the park.
So, yeah, obviously that has, there was no way I'm going to be smarter than the entire real estate division at HRM. I didn't for a moment believe that. So clearly this was something that had been discussed.
I haven't been part of those discussions, but I know we have, I think it's something like 18 lawyers and a number of real estate staff. And I know they've been working on this for a number of months. So I'm going to take them at their word that, they've had these kind of discussions. So where they lead to and what we can prove and what we can, have at the end of the day is a discussion and perhaps a process that is beyond what we can do at council. But what I can do at council is try to buy this piece of property.
We've got Sean here with us. Sean Cleary is the municipal councillor for the area that includes Sir Sanford Fleming Park. Judy Robinson is also joining us, Sean. And Judy is a resident in your area. She lives in the Reserve Road area. She's also a member of the board for Nova Scotia Nature Trust. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've been involved with a petition. There is a petition out asking for what? What are you asking people to sign off on?
Well, we're asking to get the names of people in the neighborhood who are interested in making sure that the city buys this piece of land and to show that we are a voice in the city and that we want to have our voice taken to council and that it's really important for us that this piece of land not be lost because it will, I heard earlier on your show someone said it's only a small piece of land. Yeah, but it cuts off a lot of the property. And also if it were to be a single family dwelling built there, it would be trees cut down, and then the integrity of the forest is destroyed because there's a weakness on, there wouldn't be a buffer, and the trees that are standing there now are healthy, but if you start removing things in the middle, then you have a chance of, really harming the forest that's been, able to grow there for hundreds of years.
This petition says, we, the undersigned, want to prevent the development of Fleming Park's historic Loop Road Trail and preserve. You've explained to us why this is important. Sean Cleary, how is this area zoned? What is the potential for development in it?
So the 2.3-acre property is zoned R1, so it would allow for a single-family home. And because of the flag lot nature of it, with I think there's about 17 or so feet onto Purcell's Cove Road, I think from the land use bylaw, you'd be able to get basically one home on it.
Right.
But Judy's right. In order to get that home, there's a significant mound of dirt between the two pieces of trail. And so it would do significant, damage to that area environmentally if a driveway was put in and you cut through all of that to get to a nice piece of property. Listen, from, a private property owner's point of view, if I had this piece of property and I could put a beautiful, house on it overlooking the arm, that would be fantastic. But it would detract from the trail and the park. And in fact, we would have to rename the trail. It would no longer be the Loop Trail. It would be the Double Dead End Trail.
Double Dead End Trail. That doesn't quite have the same ring to it. Judy, just before we wrap this conversation up, the petition now looking for 1,000 signatures. You're at about 314 signatures. Are you worried, though, that in some ways showing public support means that the people who own this property have a much stronger case to hold out and get as much as they can out of the municipality?
Well, I think the fact that the family actually approached the city a year ago because they wanted to sell the property to the city. You know, through generations doesn't mean that, you know, three generations ago, what they thought about keeping it and just letting public use the land is going to be the same as those today. And maybe the family members need the money today, and that's all fine. They're allowed to sell the property. The fact they approached the city a year ago and it still hasn't been resolved. And actually, if the city had, you know, taken advantage of the situation earlier and moved and gotten it to council and, you know, had it approved, and then there wouldn't be brokerage fees on it. My guess is the price would have been a little lower. I'm not privy to that, though. But, you know, there are funds through the federal government with the Nature Fund that would have been able to help with buying this land. My guess is that somebody must have dropped the ball somewhere. And, you know, I've bought and sold lots of properties, and it's never taken me a year to figure out how I'm going to buy a property. And even if the locals, you know, in the neighborhood had known, maybe we would have done some kind of funding to make sure this would happen before it ends up on the public plate to be sold. You know, it would be very sad, because once it's gone, and there'll be a big, you know, there potentially could be a big house there, and it completely takes away from the greater good of what the park is for the whole neighborhood and for the city. It's a historic site, and, you know, I feel so strongly that it should be maintained as park land. It would be the same as if we went down Spring Garden Road one day and somebody said, oh, someone's building a house in the middle of a public garden. How would everybody feel? Or in Point Pleasant Park. It's the same at Fleming Park.
Resident on the Reserve Road and a member of the board of Nova Scotia Nature Trust. Judy Robinson, thank you for this.
Thanks.
Councillor Cleary, District 9 councillor, what say you? Did somebody drop the ball here? You're the area councillor, and you say you just found out about it recently. I think our guest suggested maybe you should have known sooner.
Well, I'm not going to cast aspersions at our staff. I do have I've had a couple meetings now with our parks and real estate folks, and I'm expecting some more information. But at the end of the day, the land is for sale, and we need to buy it. So you know, I'm doing what I can to make sure that it comes back, or not comes back, but comes into public hands.
Righto. Councillor Cleary, thank you for being available to us. Thanks for talking about this important story.
Anytime, gentlemen.
Take care. District 9 councillor, that's Salifax West Armdale. And I think there is a case in law. What, are you going to spend $1 million in legal fees to perhaps exercise your legal right to use a trail that you've been maintaining and keeping up for the last 100 years?
Yep.
Lawyers are involved, eh? 2.3 acre property, $990,000. That's a lot of cabbage. It's a lot of dough. It's a lot of money.
It's a nice spot, to be honest.
Yeah. But.
Let's go split, Sheldon. Let's do this.
How much you got?
$5.
Ooh. I'm not great at math, but that's not enough.
Not if it's a true split, but if you're willing to pony up the rest.
We can go get a coffee and just stay there for a while. If we can stay for 40 years, we own it.
I can't commit to that.
Oh, you got other things to do. Okay. All right, let's take a break. Moja Lander, Concordia University economist. Oh, I meant to send him a note saying we're calling late. So, yes, Global News reports, others say there's a bunch of lobbying happening in Ottawa over federal money for a stadium. Okay, does that change the deal? Does that make it a better deal? Moja Lander said, I'm quoting him before he's even on the show, it's a political decision. Does it make sense financially? Well, that's a whole different discussion. We're going to talk about that when we get back right after this. Well, I guess it was iPolitics that first reported the news earlier in the week, and it was about a group of three people who had registered officially with the Office of the Commissioner of Lobbying of Canada so that they could make the federal case for what? We assume it's for money or financial support for a football stadium in Atlantic Canada. Moja Lander has taught university students in Halifax as well as at Concordia. He's an economist specializing in the world of professional sports. Moja, thank you again for doing this. Were you surprised to hear that this ongoing effort continues to go on?
The fact that the effort continues to go on, not surprising. That any ownership group is going to want to try and come up with some way to get money out of the public purse. The surprising part is that they now want to ask the federal government for money, not just the provincial government or municipal. That's a bit of a new one.
Hmm. You know, there's a chance that they're going to go after a COA. I don't know. Is this fall within, and I'm not sure how much you know about a COA's regulations and rules, does this fit within what the mandate of a COA would be?
You know what? I wouldn't have any clue whether that fits in within their mandate. So I couldn't say.
Right. So as you've said in the past, this is very much a political decision. But people who point to this as, you know, an opportunity for the municipality, for the city, put us on the map. I don't know what map. I asked that of a guest. All of that is true. All of that means, you know, suggests it could very well be a great idea. It's just not a fiscal investment.
No, I mean, remember that at the end of the day, the whole idea behind the motivation for this project is that you want to bring CSU to Halifax. So the fact that we're asking the federal government to maybe contribute funds to this, so what's next? If we want a new stadium for the Alouettes or for the Argos, would they start asking the federal government for this? This seems like a very sort of behavior that the federal government should not be involved in financing sports stadiums or arenas in any capacity. It's even questionable whether the province or the municipality should do it because the economic benefits are not there.
There's actually a quote from a municipal spokesperson who says there still has not been a formal proposal delivered to Halifax Regional Municipality. Does this signal anything to you about what's going on?
Yeah, you know, the entire process here with the CFL team in Halifax has been really haphazard, right? You have a name now, but you don't have an official application with the CFL. You don't have a business plan yet with the city or the province. So they seem to be just moving kind of in weird speeds. They want to build up some sort of season ticket base and fan support. So they just really seem kind of out of kilter. It's a real sort of mess that they've created.
You know, the group that has applied to be lobbyists in Ottawa, that doesn't come free. There's some cost. I'm not at all suggesting that they're paying for influence, but, you know, to have people take the time out of their schedule to do this. What does this tell you? Is this normal in the sports world to have, you know, official standing as a member of a lobby group in order to have some time with government to perhaps get them to invest?
Well, I mean, inevitably, you're going to have some degree of connection between government and the private ownership group. The fact is that whenever you ask for municipal or provincial support to build an arena or a stadium, there's going to be some link between the ownership group of a franchise and government officials. They just don't give hundreds of millions of dollars because they also want a team. So the fact that there's formal lobbying, that's actually a good thing because at least it's transparent then, and that gives us some sort of degree of acknowledgement as to what they're doing and what they're trying to accomplish. If it weren't done through any sort of formal channel, then that's where the red flag should go up that, wait a second, is this some sort of shady dealing as opposed to something that at least is above the board and visible?
I don't know if you're a betting man, but what do you say? What are the odds that you and I can be sitting maybe at the 30-yard line someday having a beer watching a CFL game in Halifax?
I still think it's pretty good. I think that the CFL wants a team there. I think the ownership group is the correct ownership group. I think the city in Atlantic Canada is the correct city. I just think that they really need to kind of get their act together and not rush the process. The idea of, you know, opening day kickoff in 2021 is just still too quickly. And the fact that they're now having to engage with lobbyists and talk to the federal government shows that maybe they're not quite as ready as they want the public to believe. Take your time, get it right, and there will be football in Atlanta, Canada. I'm pretty confident of that.
All right. First beer's on me. Moshe Lander, thank you.
You got it. Talk to you next time.
Cheers. Moshe Lander, as mentioned, teaches economics at Concordia and back at Dal. He's going to stop into the studio sometime this summer when we get a chance to have some more football talk. See, he's not against it. He thinks it could happen. It's what's wrong with criticizing the group and maybe on one hand saying you're moving too quickly, or on the other hand, you don't have all your ducks in a row yet. That's a fair comment.
Is there like a manual on how to create a CFL franchise in a city?
Maybe.
I mean, there would only be like a few examples, right?
Well, yeah, you probably have to go back to, you know, in some cases, well, how old is the Grey Cup? 100 years?
Yeah, but it's only 8 teams or whatever.
9 teams. They won 10. Sports go sports.
Does Las Vegas still have a team?
Not in this league. But they did talk, didn't they talk about expanding to Europe? Didn't I hear something about that? I don't know.
The CFL?
Yeah, maybe.
I'll have the NFL.
I'll Google that. I'll see what comes up. Torque Tuesdays. Did we check in with Evan?
No.
Oh, we sure hope he's ready.
Let's assume he's listening and finds this hilarious.
Freelance automotive writer and autotrainer.ca, wheels.ca, autoguide.com. Find him on Twitter, Evan Writes Cars. And I got some things I need to ask him about. We'll be right back.
Start your engines. It's time for Torque Tuesdays with Evan Williams.
Torque Tuesday takes on a whole new meaning when we look at the SNC-Lavalin case in the budget today.
Oh,
ouch. Political. Not political. Beep, beep. Actually, we may not stay in our lane right now. I'm not so sure that we won't delve into some political discussion.
You said we weren't going to talk about this.
What?
Damn it, Sheldon.
Can't help it. Evan Williams joins us on the line this afternoon. Evan, as mentioned, you can find his writing at autotrader.ca, wheels.ca, autoguide.com. Evan, at Evan Writes Cars. Hi, Evan. How are you?
I'm good, Sheldon. How are you?
You had a great ride down to Yarmouth, did you?
Yeah. The weather wasn't great on the way down, but it got nice for the way back.
Which road did you take? Did you go through the valley or the south?
We usually take the southern route down a lot of 103, but a lot of number 3, a lot of the old highway. Stay on the coast where it's a little more scenic.
I ran across this article, and I don't know if you saw this or not. I saw it at thewest.com, an Australian newspaper. Online edition. Former F1 superstar Mark Webber says lifting speed limits on Australian roads would improve driver concentration and save lives. He says, you know, in Europe where the speed limits are higher, you have to concentrate. So here where he's talking about Australia, where the speed limits are so slow, they have all these different limits up and down to create revenue, and that people, no wonder they get bored and they look to their cell phones. What do you think? Maybe if we just increase the speed limits, everybody will drive safer.
Well, I definitely agree that if you're afraid for your life, you're going to pay a lot more attention than if you're just kind of plodding along the 103, especially that last stretch before Yarmouth, where I don't think there's a turn for 50 kilometers.
Yeah.
And, you know, rural Australia is quite rural and quite, you know, the roads are quite straight. So I imagine it's boosting it a little bit somewhere like that makes sense. I'm not sure if we're past the point where people will put down their phone or not.
Yeah, I don't think if they haven't learned by now, they're not going to learn at all. It's easy to you could put technology in cars that block the cell phone signal. It's not hard.
No, they definitely could.
But they don't want to.
I mean, the body of the car itself does a fairly good job of it.
But you can order a car that is Wi-Fi enabled.
Yes, a lot of manufacturers are doing that now.
Seems counterintuitive.
Well, it doesn't make sense for the driver. It makes sense for everybody sitting in the back.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, data plans are cheap enough that I'm not sure how much demand there is for it.
We've got Evan Williams here with us. Oh, the other thing that you said, you noted on your Twitter account, I was just trolling your tweets. You saw your MLA's license plate is flaking off?
Yeah. I think just about everybody's noticed at this point that... there's a large series of license plates that are just kind of falling apart after a few years.
Yeah.
And if your license plate is doing that, they are under warranty for a certain amount of time. So you can go in and get one for free. Or if it's not covered, I believe a replacement's only $9 or $10, something like that, which is a lot cheaper than the ticket for not having a legible license plate.
Yeah.
So if you see your plates doing that, I know it's a bit, you know, public service announcement-y, but please get your license plate changed.
You know, the other thing that I made note of, the RCMP, municipal police, they could sit by the side of the road and just start writing tickets. Every one of those license plates that have those smoked plastic covers on them, it's against the law. And yet people do it. And what I said, not everyone who has a smoked colored license plate, you know, drives like a jerk. But there's enough of them. I think this might be, you know why they're trying to keep their license plate from being visible, because of the way they drive.
Yeah, there's a reason we want you to have a nice, big, visible plate, and that's so that you can be identified later. And if you're hiding your identity for later, that's not good. I mean, even if you didn't cause anything, even if you weren't involved, if someone's looking for a witness later, they might be looking for you and they wouldn't be able to find you.
Yeah. Here we are on the air talking cars. And we got into a bit of a discussion about the roads and the condition. People say, yeah, our cars have to be roadworthy, but the roads don't have to be carworthy. and this idea, and we can bring it all home. Real estate prices are considerably lower as you move outside of Halifax. But that means more commuters. And you know what? In 2019... greenhouse gases, carbon taxes, but there are, I can't tell you how many people like me that are traveling in every day, more than a half hour to Halifax. And yet, you know, we're talking about twinning highways, but some of the secondary roads are in deplorable shape. And I'm just not so sure that taking on more road construction is the best use of dollars.
Well, the roads here are terrible. We probably have one of the worst climates for that anywhere. It freezes and thaws almost every day, almost the entire winter, and there's not much you can do that's going to prevent potholes from forming when it's that bad. And why not take advantage, even if you live outside of the city and you're coming in, there are a lot of the express transit route options that will get you downtown, and let Metro Transit fix ball joints instead of you having to fix them.
And there we go. And that other conversation we had was about annual inspections versus biannual inspections. And what is it, 3 years for a new car?
3 years for a new car, 2 years after that.
And I just had this, you know, recollection of the conversation was at the time. It seems like a tax grab. It seems like it's not fair that every year you have to make that appointment. But, you know, are there as many crap cars on the road as there was a decade ago, 2 decades ago, 30 years ago?
We've had the inspections here for a long time. I'm not exactly sure how long, but I know I saw a vehicle in a museum on the weekend that their inspection sticker was from 1979.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the impact here is, but again, I do know that every time I travel somewhere that doesn't have inspections, I see a lot more cars that would be pulled off the road immediately if they were here. You know, a police officer wouldn't let that go by them without stopping that car and having it towed and probably crushed.
I will give full credit that the Motor Vehicle Inspection Branch, they are stopping tractor trailers. They are stopping some of the big rigs. Not saying that they're more dangerous in any way, but, you know, the cost to the driver, the traveling public, if there's a malfunction with one of those trucks is certainly something worth noting.
Yeah, and the big commercial vehicles and taxis and the like get... I think they're looking at inspections every 6 months now instead of the 2 years that your normal car would get.
Evan Williams is here with us. And, okay, we're going to keep piling it on. Shop supplies. I don't know. I had this one day, this guy showed up to work on my heat pump at my house. And, you know, he put a travel fee on his bill. I said, what's this for? Well, you know, I need my truck in order to get there. I said, well, bring your car next time. Is it cheaper? He's like, no, that's, you know, I need a truck for my work. It's like, well, I can't take my furnace to you. So, dude, that's the business you're in. You know, he said, what do you want me to do? Hide it? Yes, hide it. Put it in your bill. Same as shop supplies. Yeah. Put it in your bill.
Well, it seems like every industry is doing that now. I think it started with airlines where they started adding baggage fees and those kinds of fees. And now even, you know, if you want to print off a ticket. If you buy a ticket for an event and you want to print it off at home, there's often still a fee. It seems like for some reason we're more likely to take the cheapest price and not look at the fees until we complain about it later.
Doesn't seem right.
No, I'm definitely in favor of build all that stuff into the price so that I know the price, that you know the price. Nobody likes surprises later.
Well, yeah, that, you know, one thing to say, oh, I needed the torch in order to get the nut off. Well, you know what? You made your life easier. Why? You know, if you got it in the shop and you're using it, yeah, exactly. I'd like to have a torch too. Okay, last question, and I don't know if you saw this story. Brent and Riley Works of Belmont. It was in the Chronicle Herald talking about the father and son with their rat rod creations. I see the stuff you write about, not necessarily old cars or rat rods. Is that something you have any interest or passion for?
I don't think there's any cars that I don't like. You know, they're all good cars, Sheldon. I'm not familiar with them, but definitely anything that has passion behind it, anything that's done well, I'm a big fan of.
And we'll leave it at that. What are you working on these days? What are you writing about?
This morning, I actually wrote two stories, one about a Bentley and one about a fake Bentley.
Ooh.
There's a new Bentley Continental V8 convertible that Bentley is advertising as being more fuel efficient because it has a 550 horsepower V8 instead of a 650 horsepower W12. But the other one was somebody taking a much more economical route, and they turned a Chrysler Sebring convertible into a Bentley lookalike.
I can see that
contrast there.
Yeah, I can see that. The lines are kind of the same.
It's either the world's cheapest Bentley or the world's most expensive Sebring. I'm not really sure.
Maybe a combination of the both. You can find his writings, among other places, autotrader.ca, wheels.ca, and autoguide.com. He is a freelance automotive writer and Torque Tuesdays. Evan writes cars, at Evan writes cars. Evan Williams, safe travels, and hopefully your MLA will get his or her license plate returned and back to rights.
Well, if they're listening to this, they probably will. That's why I didn't say who it was.
Not a time for name and shame, but it's a great story nonetheless. Evan Williams, thank you, sir.
All right, thanks for having me.
Take care. It just blew me away, this F1 superstar guy, Mark Webber. I didn't know him. I'm not watching the F1 series on Netflix. Producer Matt was. But that somehow, speeding up traffic will make everybody pay more attention. Well, yeah. Uh-huh. Until there's an accident. There was one road that they described in this article that went from 60 kilometers per hour to 110. That's a pretty big jump.
It kind of reminds me of the Burnside.
Oh, the...
It goes from 60 to 90 within like 30 meters.
I used to call the Highway of Heroes the Halifax Autobahn. Just as you're leaving the one, was the 118 or the 117? Whatever number that is.
I just realized Devin's not on the line anymore.
Why, are you talking to him?
No, he's not there.
No, I just...
I was talking to our intern here, and I thought you're still chatting with Evan.
Oh, no, we wrapped that up. I was just saying I can't believe that...
So I didn't listen to anything that you guys were talking about.
I'm sorry, what?
Exactly. Did you talk about the F1 show?
Yeah, I said Matt's watching it, but I'm not.
Ah.
But this guy, Mark Webber, is he in the series? Is he in that show? Do you ever... Does that a name... Is that some
it's
guy?
It's funny, a guy who finished second... I think he won the Australian Grand Prix this weekend.
Yeah.
We hadn't heard him because they're just focusing on some of the drivers. Certainly don't know all of them.
And is it last year's season that they're talking about?
Yes.
I suspect, yeah.
What was interesting about it, though, I know we probably have like other guests. I'm just chatting away.
That's fine.
We finished that show on Saturday night. We're like, well, that was the season wrapped up. But now we're kind of excited to see what will happen next. Like, we're not F1 fans, but now we're into it a little bit. And we checked... Well, when does the F1 season start? The next day.
Ooh, timing.
2 o'clock in the morning, to be precise.
You didn't stay up, though.
We didn't stay up, no. There was a replay at like 9 o'clock.
Ah, well. But that's old news by then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I could see us watching. I'm not going to say we're like watch.
Jackie Stewart and a great day for a motor race.
But I can see us watching a few races. Good times. It's exciting.
I wanted to read this email because the guy sent me back another one with a big question mark. Hey, a longtime listener, both you and Rick. I absolutely love debates when both sides are using facts. My concern, as your guest who was just on, this was over the noon hour, said, let's get those assault rifles out of people's hands or something to that effect. This isn't a fact. It's misinformation. Should be corrected. Wes wanted to say the AR-15 is a semi-automatic rifle, fires one bullet per triggered press. The problem with trying to explain this, Wes, to people who aren't fans of guns is they don't care. They don't care about the characteristics. I understand you wanted to be accurate in your language. And that's, again, why Tony Rogers is going to be on the show a little later today because, again, he had some concerns raised over some of the conversation, the way it's being presented. And as you point out, and as he points out, anyone who is legally entitled to have, possess, or purchase weapons in Canada are subject to daily checks by the government, by the RCMP, to make sure you're not breaking the law. So there are checks and balances in place. So to your point and to others, you know, there are rules. They are being followed. And yet, you know, we talk about exceptions. They can be hellacious, devastating, tragic, and senseless.
I think we should have less of those handheld thingies that shoot the bullets.
Well, there's some of that that needs to be discussed, too. We're going to take a break, come back in just a few moments. Hey, March break's on. What are you up to? Cape and cowl. Let's go. Let's go to the comic book store. Come on, nerds. Let's get on her. Let's go.
You're listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show on Halifax's number one.
You know, there's no snow to send them out to shovel. No leaves to rake up. No lawn to mow. You can get them out washing your car. If you want to find something for the kids to do on March break, or you could find something to do at CNC. Cape and Cowl Comics and Collectibles. It's been a while since we had a reason to call Jay Aaron Roy and get Jay on the show. Jay, how you been?
I've been great. Thank you very much for having me.
Happy March break.
Thank you. You too.
Teacher Appreciation Week as well.
Yes.
Let's go back in time. How did this start? When did Cape and Cowl Comics and Collectibles become not just a tongue twister, but a place to go?
Yeah, that would have been September 2014.
Almost the same age as this radio show.
Oh, there you go. That's right, yes.
We have similar birth dates. So I assume you've done this in the past over March break, had an event at the comic book shop.
Yeah, I'm always liking to switch it up and have different events, but something I do like to do is really honor teachers and give them a break in their budget, because I know a lot of teachers buy their own supplies for their classrooms, so try to give them a break and give the kids something to do in the community.
It's not necessarily an educational supply store. It's not necessarily a craft supply store. What educational value are teachers looking for when they go to a comic book shop?
Yeah, well, helping reluctant readers basically have an interest in reading is something that I love to help with. So I have lots of all-ages appropriate reading material. I have some French comics and graphic novels as well for the French schools around. And, yeah, some learning board games and things like that.
Get your nerd on. Cape and cowl, we know the teachers are the real heroes. Absolutely. When you decided that this was the business, why is this the business that you embarked on, Jay?
Well, it just is a sort of a gathering of all the kind of things that I like to do. And the things that I'm interested in, and a lot of my friends are interested in this stuff. And it's such an eclectic group. So I've got local artists, but I've also got gamers and people who love comics. And the community is so diverse. My shop reflects that.
And Jay, Aaron, Roy, where is this shop at that we speak about right now?
536 Sackville Drive in Lower Sackville.
In Sac Vegas. So Jay, you've shared stories about, you know, how kids react when they come in and what the space is like. And do you still have video games hooked up so kids can play those?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The arcade machines that I used to have here belonged to someone else, and they've since opened an arcade in Truro. So I don't have the arcade machines, but I do have my own floor model TVs, and very often my Nintendo and my Super Nintendo and the Wii is hooked up. And, yeah, so kids can come in and try to beat my Duck Hunt score, which a few of them have.
You still have Duck Hunt. I was so embarrassed to learn that the other controller can control the duck.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. I've hosted a lot of birthday parties here, and I say, you know, Duck Hunt is actually multiplayer. And then, you know, kids are like, what? First of all, they come in and they look at my floor model TV and they ask me what it is. So there's always a learning curve there.
I'm old enough to remember that if you wanted to change the channel, you had to get up and walk across the room.
Oh, that's right. I was my dad's remote.
That's one way to put it. And this is something you're doing right through till the weekend, obviously. So are teachers coming in? Are you seeing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. So they're getting 20% off all comics and graphic novels. And I've got taxes in on board games for everybody. Tonight we have our drop-in free D&D session. And then we've got lots of other events going on. So you can see on Facebook on Friday we're having a magic tournament. And then on the weekend, at the end of the week here, we're having a free board game play all weekend. So lots of fun stuff going on.
It's not a store. It's a community. March break at Cape and Cowl Comics and Collectibles. And again, there was a point in which you weren't quite sure about the future of the shop.
Oh, it's been up and down for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years for sure. But we're definitely moving strong into the future. I can't wait. There's lots of more community initiatives. We're going to be doing lots of cool community events with the Posse Project and the Den, which is the youth drop-in in the lower part of the Sackville Library. We've got lots of fun stuff coming up.
A safe space for nerds of all description. So I have to ask, the man that has for most of his life been searching for the Oak Island treasure has passed away.
Oh, yes, I heard about that.
Dan Blankenship was his name. And
yeah.
Are there comic books on Oak Island?
I'm sure there are. You know, off the top of my head, I don't know any titles, but I'm sure because there's comics on everything.
And what's your thought on this mystery, the Oak Island treasure as it's become to be known?
You know, it's intriguing. I don't know, there's so much lore around it. You know, I have a few friends who are archaeologists and they sort of scoff at it, but I don't know. You know, I find it intriguing and I think it's a really cool sort of folktale, at least, that's around our area, which is kind of neat.
Absolutely. The show's been on, I think, since 2014. It's been on a long time, and I'll keep going back to my refrain. It's a reality TV show. It's not
totally
a documentary.
Totally.
But sometimes we need an escape. And
that's right.
Just like a good comic book.
That's
Jay,
exactly right.
Aaron, Roy, thank you so much. Continued success with your business. It's a real pleasure to get you back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You take care.
Right on, you too.
I don't know if I told this. I said I was going to, but I didn't. My Dan Blankenship conversation. He was set up at the, I think it was a church. Anyways, it was right around the corner from where the money pit is, from the island that was blocked off. This would be in early 2000s. It was the first public display of some of the things that had been found in borehole 10X. And then a chain, a section of chain found. And all of this on display. And I was quite nervous about meeting Dan Blankenship. And he was, well, I mean, that's 20 years ago. So he was still not a young man. And I said, Mr. Blankenship, for a great deal of your adult life, since 1965, you've been searching for a treasure here. You must believe there's something there. He took a steely glance at me and said, I'd be a GD idiot if I didn't. And he turned around on his heel and walked away. I did get the interview. He came back. But
it's a great answer.
It is a great answer. I give him full props for being a smart ass. Right straight through. And some people were asking about the obituary and wondering, it didn't make any sense to them. It says on this one fan page, the sad news comes to us from Dan's granddaughter this morning that he had passed away, natural causes, March 17th. It goes without saying that Dan did not pass away while looking for treasure. No curse comments, please. The lore exists. The stories continue. They're sending prayers of comfort out to Dan's surviving family. I was speaking with one of his sons today about that, and I think the service they're working towards is perhaps Thursday. When we know, we'll let you know. And no curse comments. Except for that was a funny comment from him.
Well,
to me.
I mean, otherwise it's like, what has he been doing? You know? What do you think, man?
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry.
Come on, man.
I know. If you're a nurse and you happen to work at one of two hospitals in this province, you got that memo. The memo that says you're not allowed to take vacation because, well, there's staff shortages. Some are asking, is this minister disconnected with his own department because he was asked? Is there a shortage of nurses? Nope. And, I'm paraphrasing. But we're going to talk about health care with Nova Scotia Health Coalition, Chris Parsons. That's coming up after this news break. We'll be back after Sky's update.